Tom.
Yes.
Michael Fromer.
Hey, Michael, how are you?
I'm great.
Well, Chad and I had been talking for a few years about this, and your readers might not know, since about 2010, I've kind of been working with Universal Decca Music to keep the Mercury catalog, you know, current and, you know, in print and in circulation. So as of right now, you know, everything that my mother did in the 1990s is back in print via those three box sets, those CD box sets.
Right.
And we've also put about 25 additional titles into print that I've overseen or done the remastering of.
So where did you do that?
The previous ones were all digital. So if the ones that I did were done here at my studio.
From transfers that had been done already.
No, we did new transfers. The way I do it when we do digital is I work with Plangent Process, which is
Jamie
Howarth.
Jamie,
and
sure.
John Chester.
Yep.
And so the tapes get sent to me, and I clean up the tapes and get them so they'll play correctly, because all the splices need to be cleaned.
Sure.
And, and a lot of them need replacing. And then John Chester does the tape transfer, and then Jamie runs Plangent Process on it, and then I do the 3-to-2 mix and mastering. But with these new ones, with these LPs, Chad had mentioned before about Mercury Living Presence and doing new LPs, and I thought about it, especially in light of what's happened with the market for CDs and you know, digital downloads, and I see that, you know, the LP market has been thriving over the past few years, and you know, I did some research. I looked at how he did the RCA Living Presence, and you know, I thought, you know, this is a good job. This guy, you know, he gets it. He knows how to do quality, and he's willing to invest in quality.
Absolutely, that's Chad.
So you know, he mentioned last year that he had the rights to a couple of titles, and so I said, all right, well, you know, how do you want to do them? And so we came to an arrangement. We decided, let's just do them right. Let's do them right from the master tapes. You know, let's do them 45 RPM. Let's do as good a job as we can in the LP medium with these.
Yeah.
And so that's how this all came about. The tapes got sent to me, and I cleaned them up and got them ready for transfer. And then I flew down to Nashville with the tapes, which is an adventure trying to fit them in an overhead compartment. And
how do you go through security? Do they let you? Do they give you a bypass, or it's not a problem going through that machine?
It's okay to go through the machine, but they unpacked everything and looked at all the tapes. They had not seen, and they ran that swab over all the tapes, the explosive swab.
Yeah.
I said, I can assure you, they're not. They're polyester. They're not explosive.
They don't know. They didn't even know what that is.
No. Everyone admitted they had never seen a reel-to-reel tape before. But they were all very nice in both LaGuardia and Nashville.
Right.
So then I worked with Ryan Smith down there at Sterling Sound, and
you had three-track tapes down there?
Yes.
And he had a three-track. He's a three-track playback deck.
He does. He has a very customized Ampex ATR 100, which was one of the last ones that Mike Spitz did before he passed away.
Right.
At ATR Services. So it's got Mike's transformerless electronics, which sound really good. And I'm pretty sure he's got Greg Orton heads on it. He must, because he has three-track heads, because there were never stock three-track heads for that machine. So, we did. This is kind of cool. Ryan cut without a net. I give him a lot of credit because, I don't think there's anyone practicing the art of cutting today except Bernie Grundman, who goes back to the time before preview computers, which is the way that records were cut from about the late 60s to now. There's a a computer. It could be an analog computer, but
right.
I think the later ones are digital computers.
Right.
It's a way to control the margin
and pitch.
And depth.
Yeah, sure.
And the old way to do it, the way the original Mercurys were cut and the original RCAs and everything up to the late 60s, was that the cutting engineer would either use a fixed pitch with the grooves, which doesn't work with classical sides.
No.
You need to have wider pitch for the loud parts, and you want to narrow the pitch for the quiet parts.
Sure. I guess a person who knows how to read music could read along with the score and make the adjustment manually, but that doesn't exist much anymore.
No. The way it was done traditionally is the cutting engineer would listen in advance and would pre-listen and make notes.
Right.
But the way the Mercurys were done, because it was a live 3-to-2 mix, which nobody else did, RCA and everybody else would make a cutting master, a
right.
two-track cutting master. But the way my mother originally did it in the 60s was the three-track tapes would be edited to a master, and then she would make a 3-to-2 mix and work with the cutting engineer, George Piros. And she would read ahead in the score and hold up hand signals to George about when to tighten
right.
the pitch. We still on?
Yeah.
Okay, so something clicked in the phone line. So the way we do it now, the way Ryan and I did it is kind of interesting. We had we had the original, my mother's CD audio up in the computer, and so we had the waveform on a screen, and then Ryan would look ahead at the waveform.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah, because we didn't want to play the tapes too many times.
Sure.
We did make a high-resolution transfer at the same time that we were cutting the records, but, we had to be careful about
it. Did they hold up well?
Yeah, I think we had one splice pop on his machines. I mean, I had done a lot of work on the tapes. But, I think it was one side was busted from a bad splice. That was it. Everything else cut in sequence.
Yeah. I know the people that prefer things left in the analog domain are willing to put up with a little bit of dropout or a couple of, blemishes, sonic blemishes, just to keep it in the analog domain, so it's never an issue.
Yeah, well, you can't have like an outright jump like we had, but we fixed it.
Yeah.
It was we had to replace the splice. And I thought that Dick's 3-to-2 mix was very good. I kind of used it as a guide when I did my my own transfer in 3-to-2 mix.
So now what titles is Chad releasing first?
The Starker London Symphony and Dorati Dvorak Cello Concerto,
right,
and the Starker Solo Bach Cello Suites.
And those will be successful. Yeah, those. In fact, I referenced that CD in a review I just wrote. Interestingly, the Dvorak Cello Concerto.
Oh, really?
Yeah. People are shocked that I review. I reference CDs, but I do. So.
Yeah, those. I thought that CD turned out well.
So you went down there and just to do two releases. That's the starting point.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes. So, hopefully there'll be demand for more, because there's a whole bunch of titles I'd like to do this way. I really want to stress that Chad was really, I respect how he was willing to do this. Like, just let me and Ryan do our job.
That's how that's how Chad operates, and that's why he has so many great titles and such a loyal following. He's got 35,000 customers. It's a pretty good number.
Yeah, that is. I couldn't believe that. I had not done disc cutting before, right? I had overseen it for other titles,
right.
Cut from digital masters, but I hadn't done an all analog sitting in a studio and cutting a disc with a guy who knows how to use the lathe and everything.
Right.
That's quite the thing.
Yeah, he's good. And he's a young guy, too, which I really like,
Yeah.
Of course, everybody's a young guy to me at this point, so.
Well, I'm getting there myself. But he's open-minded about how to do things. And,
right.
The that Neumann VMS-80 is quite the machine. I was, you know, we did a test cut, and I expected it to sound more like an old record, and it sounded really very much like the master tape.
Yeah, that's been my experience with hearing those kinds of comparisons when I've been in. And there wasn't any limiting, right? Didn't you have to limit anything? Or
no, we didn't mess with EQ or limiting.
No, just cut it. Just cut the tape.
Yeah, which is how the originals were done. Although, I do think that there was some gain riding with the originals, because I think some of that stuff was impossible to cut at 33 and a third with a Westrex cutter head and a Scully lathe back in the day.
Yeah. Now, when you're doing track breaks at 45, was there any difficulties with fitting whole pieces on a side or?
Well, the most challenging cut for Ryan was definitely the first and third movements of the Dvorak Cello Concerto, because the sides are about 15 minutes, and they're quite dynamic. So that in that case, he really had to manually control the lathe and sit there and very carefully watch the pitch and
I mean, 15 minutes of 45, you're pretty much approaching the limits.
Yeah, you're pushing it, but you can, you know, with classical music, you can tighten it up quite a bit during the quiet parts. You know, if that were a disco single, yeah, that's pushing it.
Do you know that classic records actually cut some sides at 78 RPM?
No, I didn't know that.
I have some of them. They're it's unbelievable what they sound like. You get 4 minutes of music or, you know, 5 minutes of music, but just as an indicator of what you can put on a record, it's astonishing.
Yeah. Oh, well, I wish, you know, it's too bad that the 78 as a single medium never really morphed into modern times, like with the top end and stuff.
Yep.
Because, you know, you can imagine what an Elvis single or a Motown single would sound like at 78 as opposed to a 45.
Well, they could still cut. They could still do it, you know, for people who can play 78s, which is anybody who's bought the new Technics turntable. So there's a base out there for it, but one thing at a time. So, so you got these two titles, and they've been cut, and after Ryan finished, they got sent to QRP for plating. And have they been pressed yet? Have you heard of test pressing?
I haven't received a test pressing yet because Gary's behind on that. But the plating has definitely been done.
Yeah, well, that you got to get done right away.
Yeah, exactly. That's got to get there overnight and such.
Yep. Well, that's very exciting. And Chad will do the covers justice, too. You know, he does great covers.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got high-resolution scans of all the original stuff from me. And, you know, I think that he's qualified to do as nice a pressing as can be done with this.
Yep, I agree.
He sent me some of Ryan's other work with the RCAs, and... you know, I was just impressed with the overall presentation. Just a high quality way to do it. He, you know, the thing that is I think is different from Chad and some of the previous reissue labels is that he's a collector, but he's willing to go one step further than the original.
Chad,
you know,
he's absolutely
not satisfied with it just sounding like something that's 50 years old. He wants it to sound as good as it can sound in a modern context.
I agree. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, sometimes Chad is doing those RCAs from a three-track, doing it the same way that you did it, and they're brighter, and they're more open. And some of the people listen to that, and they listen to the original pressing, which was at least a cutting master down, or maybe two.
Yes.
And they go, oh, that's sweeter, that's warmer, that's not what was done, you know? So.
Well, it's not what was picked up on the tape.
Yeah.
That is true. The other thing with the RCAs is you know, I'm sure your readers know that as you get to the higher number S's, usually they've crunched the dynamics to make it playable on cheaper players.
Yep, that's right. The notion of idealism gives way to commerciality, and that's what always ends up happening. That's how you get rid of the beautiful RCA logo with the dog and all that beautiful artwork, and you end up with an orange RCA corporate logo on a record. It's like,
oh God, yes.
What were you thinking?
Well, also Dynaflex.
Yeah.
That's like the ultimate cheesy commercial thing. Those paper thin records.
Yeah, Dynaflex, and some of them don't sound bad actually, but worse was the Dyna Groove where they.
Oh yeah, where they pre-distorted.
Yes,
that was I think that only sounded ideal on their on their console systems.
Probably.
Because it was, I think it was basically built to match their console systems. So that they're cutting into their records to overcome the flaws of their own home stereo systems.
Yep, probably so. That was just misguided thinking.
Yeah.
But now we're getting back to what you're doing here, which is, do you have any expectations in terms of numbers of sales? Does that matter to you? I mean, it matters on a certain level, but...
Well, it matters because I'd like to do more.
Right.
You know, I just want to emphasize of the remastering that I've done, this was particularly fun. This was very gratifying.
I'm sure.
And
you know, so, the people that'll buy this will actually sit down and listen to it as if it's, you know, Starker sitting and playing for them. That's how they'll absorb it. It won't be background music. It won't be while they're cooking dinner. It'll be a lights-out listening experience. And I don't think there's anything better than that for what you've got there and what you're doing and your parents' legacy.
Yeah, I hope they enjoy it. You know, the box suites especially, the way we mixed it and the way it ended up sounding, it's like it's a man in front of you in a room.
Yeah.
It's really unbelievable. You can hear him breathing. You can hear him shifting in his seat.
Yep.
Ryan and I were pretty surprised on how different the 3-2 mixes have been over time. Like, Harold Lawrence did one kind of 3-2 mix on the original LPs. LPs sound like they were cut from a cutting master because we just didn't find that much hiss in the three tracks.
Oh,
so I suspect that I think that Harold went more to using cutting masters, especially in the later 60s.
Yeah.
So remember that original 3-LP set was released in 1966.
And that's so expensive and collectible now. But I'm sure what you're doing now is going to be better.
I think it sounds better.
The vinyl's better. The pressing quality's better. The equipment's
better.
Yeah,
I like the mix better. We went for even a different mix than what my mother did for the CD.
Oh.
We made it a little more like the man is in front of you.
That's...
So you still hear the room and everything, but it's more intimate, I guess, is the way I put it.
Interesting. Now, in those original mixes, they didn't add any artificial reverb or anything. It was just straight.
No. But you know, they spread out three omnidirectional microphones in a big room, which was the ballroom studio at my father's place, Fine Recording.
Right.
And it was a widespread. You can hear from the tape, so it can sound. Too distant, in my opinion. It's very easy to make it too distant sounding.
Yeah. When you see that, like Rainbow pressed 10 million records, URP pressed over 10 million records, Optimal pressed almost 10 million, GZ pressed 14 million, you see these numbers of records pressed, and then you get the SoundScan, the Nielsen SoundScan numbers, so 8 million records sold, there's a disconnect there. Those numbers can't possibly correlate. Nobody's pressing records to put them on the shelf. They're pressing to sell them. And a lot of the records that are being sold are not reported.
I think is SoundScan covering Amazon?
I think so. They don't really divulge what they're doing, but I know if the record doesn't have a barcode on it, which a lot of these reissues don't, they don't get covered.
Yeah.
And a lot of the indie record stores don't get covered. And the percentage of records that are being sold by these indie record stores keeps going up. And those numbers are verified.
I agree with you 100% because there's I didn't get to it, but apparently there's a really nice record store in Nashville, and one of the guys at Sterling was telling me that the whole front quarter of that store is new issue stuff now.
Yeah, well, that's amazing what's going on, and the interest that was at this event was incredible. So even
the proof's in the pudding of trying to get anything pressed today. You wait for months.
Yeah, and there are new pressing plants opening up all the time. And
yes. And new production presses, which surprised me.
Yeah, I mean, the Phoenix Alpha's pressing, and Viral in Canada, they're making presses, and New Built in Germany. there's a lot of new presses that are available, and,
yeah.
and people are buying them and setting up. Some of them are boutique presses where it's only one press or two press, and they're cutting records for indie bands in small numbers, which is great that someone's doing that.
Can I say one more thing while it's recording? So I just wanted to emphasize one thing for your article.
Sure.
So you know, when I started kind of taking I guess you'd call it custody of this brand and trying to move it forward, you know, I wanted to carry on how my mother did it, going for the utmost quality.
Right.
And you know, I'll admit I was skeptical if we could get the master tape onto a record.
Right.
Because my skepticism was proved wrong. So I just want to emphasize that it is possible to get a very high quality, you know, get very, very close to what's on the master tape.
I like hearing that from you.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know me. I was, you know, I've done state-of-the-art digital remastering on this, so I know what you can get off these master tapes. And
right.
I feel like our playback and the way that Ryan cut those records, we got everything that was coming out of that tape machine.
That's great. I like hearing that.
Yeah.
So, and Jamie's process is great. And but the issue to me is, do you really hear scrape flutter when you're playing back those tapes? I mean, do you?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you're not going to, let me put it this way. By the time you have cut this onto a record, manufactured a record, and played the record, this is pretty damn close to the tape.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that for the audiophile market, let me put it this way. I like both ways of doing it, but I like this way because I respect that audiophile ethos that, you know, it was recorded analog. I want to play it analog. This is how I want to hear it. And I just want to say that, you know, we worked very hard to get the highest quality you can in that world, and I feel like we succeeded.
Yep, that's great. That's great to hear.
Yeah,
okay.
And now let me tell you one more thing.
Sure.
When I get the test pressings, I'm going to email you, and I want to come down to your place and play them for you.
Great talking with you, and please stay in touch.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks, Mike.
Okay, bye.
Bye.